Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Faith Church Podcast. I'm your host, Jay Williams, and joining me today is Jeff Clossy.
Hey, good morning, Jay.
Good morning.
Good to be with you, man.
I'm back.
Yeah, it's good to have you back.
I got demoted last week.
Yeah, you did. We just locked all the doors, and that was it.
Jeff and Christoph decided, let's get this done before Jay even gets in the office.
He's like banging on the wall.
We couldn't let me in.
I don't know if anyone could hear that on the podcast.
I don't know if they could. You could go back and listen to it. You can listen to all 8 minutes of it and just find it.
Uh-huh, right. 38 minutes, Jay.
You guys were done so fast. You were done.
We were done so fast and covered twice the amount of material.
Wait,
as normal.
What are you implying? I don't. All right.
Was that jujitsu? That was judo. It's like using your momentum and then, isn't that what you do in that?
Maybe. Is that Christmas judo? Because this is the Christmas time and I'm getting shots fired here across the desk.
Everyone heard.
Yes. Yes, they did. Well, Merry Christmas.
Yeah, today's what day is it? It's the 23rd.
23rd.
So tomorrow we have I'm so excited. I love our Christmas Eve worship here. That'll be wonderful. Everyone will probably be hearing this after that, but
I would assume. I mean, it'll probably be posted, but if somebody's listening, this is like on your Christmas break, you can listen to this.
Maybe people are wrapping presents to the podcast.
Oh.
I could see that.
So how does wrapping presents work in your house? Do you share it? Do you split it?
Jess does a lot more of it than I do, but yeah, it's a shared endeavor. She's definitely the more skilled wrapper.
Yes. Well, that's how it works with me. So early on in our marriage, I would try to wrap it, but Lauren did not approve of any of the wrapping that I would do. So basically I could get the gifts that would go into a gift bag. But now at this stage, it's like, it doesn't matter. It's just throw it out, which is a bummer for me because I kind of liked getting let off the hook. I'm not good at it. So, but now the bar has been lowered. So I meet that bar
now.
You're
acceptable.
Yeah. What drives me crazy about wrapping presents is the waste.
Oh, like the paper, you mean?
It just drives me nuts that I'm putting this paper on, especially when you're wrapping it on Christmas Eve, which is when we do most of our wrapping.
Yeah.
I'm like, this is on for not even 12 hours. We are just putting this on.
Do you guys put them under your tree then? Or do you wait till, okay. Cause your cats will leave it alone.
I mean, mostly
for the most, yeah, that's good.
Yeah. By this point, they've learned their lesson. They've had enough intestinal issues with the pine tree that I think they're just like, and we don't, like, we'll put, we actually don't use a lot of bows and ribbons because of that, because they'll probably.
That's probably exciting for them.
Yeah. I mean, they do think, every year, they think the tree is for them. Uh-huh. Like, when we bring it in, they're just like, oh my gosh, this is the best place ever. Thank you so much. Right. Well, it's not really for you, but, and then a few accidents later that we have to clean up, they're like, oh yeah, I probably shouldn't eat those.
Uh-huh.
But
that's so funny.
It is what it is, man.
But that's good. They don't really harass the presents too much.
They seem not to. Like I said, if you draw their attention, they like to sit on it. They like to sit on the presents and then sometimes they'll just start to scratch. So that can happen. You got to be mindful. That's part of the reason why we don't bring them out until Christmas Eve. If they were out for a week, then you're probably going to have a few that, and then once the wrapping starts to undo, I could totally imagine they would just go crazy on
finish it off.
Yeah. So yeah, so we wrap them on usually Christmas Eve, and then you're just thinking, these are on here for like this paper. It's like getting out a baggie for some carrots that you're going to eat in a couple hours. Uh-huh. It just feels to me, I know that I'm weird, especially up here. Like nobody's thinking about that, but it does. It wears on me.
I mean, I can relate. It's not, I don't lose sleep over it, but yeah, it is definitely a unique, but it just wouldn't be the same if you just put all the presents under the tree and there they are, right?
Just like in
a
box.
A very different experience.
Just in the packaging. Yeah. I know.
In the Amazon box.
I know. And I know. Like,
this year,
I,
we're going to leave all the Amazon boxes.
I'm not
boxes
like bah humbug.
Sealed.
I still wrap them. I'm just saying it bothers me. I like the old days of newspaper. I used to use a lot of newspaper even when I was younger. But now we don't have newspaper to, you know, like you wrap, when you could wrap a present in the Sunday comics. So So it's all colorful and everything.
Yeah, that's fun.
That's kind of fun.
That is.
We also would do treasure hunts. So that's another way of getting around it.
So you look for it, but it's not wrapped when you find
it. It's not wrapped when you find it. It's a game to get, or it's already set up.
Yeah.
So my family would do that sometimes where the thing's already set up. You know, whether it was I remember getting a CD player and it was playing the CD as I got closer and then I found it. And yeah. So things
that's
like
fun.
That. Yeah, that's fun. And you avoid the wrapping. And, well, never mind. All right.
You're bringing back memories for me. I'm going to save them because we don't want this to be too long.
I know. We're already.
I wanted to share a funny thing about my Christmas tree right now. So we have two Labrador retrievers, one of which, Augie, is a very large one and a very light color, beautiful animal. And he is the most presumptuous, kind of like what you're describing your cats as, like, oh, all this is for me. So his issue, though, is that his tail is like a baseball bat. I mean, it's unbelievable. So if he comes over by the tree and he gets like he's excited, which is all the time, he's going to wag his tail. Anything of, you know, like a bulb is just going to go flying. And as soon as it's on the ground, then of course it was for him. So our tree is funny. It's a little top heavy in the sense that you cannot have things that will break on the lower level of the tree because he's going to whack it with his tail, which is really funny. It's amusing more than anything to me, but... Yeah, it's definitely a dynamic.
So you just showed the difference, one of the big differences between cats and dogs. So the more tempting ornaments to them, we have to put them down low.
Yeah, see, they don't climb up.
So they don't climb up, and they don't jump on the tree trying to bat at them. Like so the swingy ones have to be down low so that they can kind of bat at it a little bit, and then they're like, okay, I've done that. But if you put a tantalizing one way up high, you're asking for trouble.
Yeah. That. Thankfully, I'm sure there are dogs that do that, that go after the high one. He does not. It's an accidental, oh, look, I hit it with my tail, and now it's on the ground.
You're just waiting for a Lampoon's Christmas Vacation moment with my cats. That's what you were pointing out at the staff Christmas party, that you thought that one of them was sitting under there, and you thought...
It's like, Jay, it looks like that cat's about to bite the string of lights there, buddy. Maybe it should climb under that.
She would not have been the one. The one that was under there would not be the one to do that. The other one, it's possible.
Oh, my word. But,
all right,
nonsense.
Well, speaking of nonsense, let's talk about the sermon.
Wow, that was a good transition.
It was a good transition. So, yeah. Anything that you want to, this is what happens the day before Christmas Eve. Jeff said, are you sure you want to record a podcast? I'm like, yeah, but because I think we won't have one next week. And then I'm out teaching the next week. So who knows?
So I'm going to have another 38 minute one while you're gone.
Yeah, I might. This one might be an 8 minute one.
Well, okay. So topic wise, we're still in our, in the beginning series leading into Christmas here.
Yes.
And Christoph 2 weeks ago did intimacy with God, and then you followed up with intimacy with other humans that we're made for.
Yes,
and
like
connecting,
reconciliation. Yeah,
yeah, connecting with each other, and it's so interesting that like there's a lot of places you could have gone with like why is that difficult? What gets in the way of that? Why do we struggle with it? Even though every one of us has it in us that we want that we need connection with other people. It looks different. Different personalities seek it in different ways, but we all need it. And you pointed out three ways that get in the three things that really get in the way and become obstacles for us. So blame, jealousy, judgment are the three you highlighted. One of the just quick observation before I ask anything is it's interesting how those are just so front loaded in the Genesis text. That we elevate ourselves to the place of judge immediately. That's why, like, when it says, you'll be like God, knowing good from evil, that's like a temptation to be like, I have the kind of knowledge God has. I'm very godlike. That's what we want. But we turn that then, right? And we turn it against each other in judgment. But we also see in the garden immediately blaming and jealousy. Like, I want what I don't have. I can eat from every tree except for that one. So I'm going to crave that one, right? I'm going to be like jealous for it and of the possibility of it. But then the blame, did you have like others that you had to cut that were also part of like, as you were just searching and studying these passages that you feel like I just didn't have time for that?
I mean, there's so many. What I wanted to do was just go right out of the gate. So this was one of those that one of the hard things about a topical message like that, where you're trying to use, you want to use a text as your base, is that there's so many. Like if I was just going to do a topical series on what causes fracturing in our relationships, there is so much. I mean, I guess there was one part that I cut out that I thought, that I was going to talk a little bit about how hard it is. I kind of alluded to it, saying that I can't guarantee that, you know, if you're battling against these things, that you're never going to be judged, you know, here, that people aren't going to blame you, that's because we're messy. So I did, in a little bit in the, when there's no Lone Ranger Christian, you know, I thought it would be good to talk about how much work it takes. That I think a lot of times people, they might realize this and realize, oh yeah, I don't want to blame. And I alluded to it. I had one line in there, but there was a whole section that I would have gone into, originally when I said, you know, that people will say, yeah, I am going to repent. So I'm in this argument and I'm going to realize that I'm going to stop and I'm going to repent. And then the other person doesn't. And then what happens? And so, you know, 'cause I hear that a lot from people where I'll say, you know, yeah, you need to be the first to apologize. And they'll come back and say, well, I did that. It didn't work. And what we're revealing there is that it's a means to an end, that it's not about faithfulness to Jesus, in that it's about getting what I want, which is a little bit just how the world will co-opt the teachings of Jesus. It turns into more of a, you catch more flies with honey than with vinegar. Same way with like servant leadership. I was just talking to somebody.
Pragmatic.
Yeah, it's pragmatic. It's the reason why servant leadership is good is because then your business will be more successful and everyone will work harder and everything. Well, that's not always how that works. You know, like Jesus, the literally hours after he did this beautiful act of service by washing people's feet, he's abandoned and murdered. So it doesn't. And then he says, forgive them, they know not what they do. So again, it's this theme. I guess the big thing I left out was not so much other things, because there are so many other things that cause fracturing, but more just that the motivation of avoiding these things and pursuing them has to be faithfulness to Christ. And so I felt like that got worked in enough other ways that I didn't need to draw special attention to it. But that was definitely one.
Yeah. It's interesting when, you know, when our interactions with others, so if like our kindness, you know, say, take another example of just what faithfulness to Christ looks like. So kindness, right? It's interesting to think of how many times he teaches it directly or indirectly about that quote unquote not working, like in the, if you frame it in that sense, like just because you're kind to someone doesn't mean they will be kind to you. Right. So he obviously addresses that in so many different kinds of ways, like blessing those who curse you, for example, loving not just those who love you back, but loving your enemies as well. And I think when it comes to forgiveness and reconciliation, that's also going to be part of it. I mean, I think it's significant to me that he built in to the Lord's Prayer that is prayed all the time by Christians, this reconciliation piece, not just with God, but also with other human beings. And to me, that should be helpful for us, because he anticipated, before we knew we had that need, he anticipated that our life would be full of moments where we needed to forgive other people because we wronged them, but also where other people might not respond to our attempt to do that in ways that we would want them to. You know, he knew that, and he provided means for us. But I do think I love how you're framing that ultimately it is not about, the end result as far as other people's behavior in response to us. It's about us in our connection with Jesus, our faithfulness to him. And I do believe even when it doesn't go how we hope, we are better off for it. So it's interesting how there is something that we get to experience in our faithfulness to him, even when it doesn't result in the other person reciprocating that, like say it's forgiveness, for example, or extending a hand of an olive branch in some way. We still do, I think, experience benefits of it that are worthwhile. It's just that those things are fruit. They're results that are not in our control. Ultimately, our faithfulness is our goal. in that. And we talk, it's interesting. You're making me think about our How People Change class that we've taught a couple of times now. And in that model of change that we talk about, our fruitful or faithful responses to Jesus have consequences. That's not the best word. It's more like results, but the word we use is consequences in that class. But it's things that happen as a result of us being faithful to him that then he brings about. And I think when it comes to reconciling with other people, sometimes our call is just to absorb as well. We all have those moments, right? Where if we sought a conversation every time someone wronged us, that wouldn't work either, right? So sometimes our call is to just absorb, but sometimes it is to have a hard conversation with people, and the results of that in our own heart, because we're changed by it as well. So we're faithful to him, and then he transforms us as we obey him and walk basically in the new life he gave us, are pretty amazing. So I guess just to add on to that, that I do think even when it doesn't work exactly how we hope, there is fruit.
Yeah, just something you said there made me think. You said it doesn't always need a conversation. Sometimes it's just to absorb. But I would say that absorbing is also an act of reconciliation, right? So we've talked about this before, but it's a really critical thing to not just bury something. When somebody wrongs you, it needs to be reconciled. Now, one way to reconcile it is to determine in your own mind or your own heart that I'm not bothered by this. I'm not offended by this. This isn't some big wrong that needs to be dealt with. This was an offhanded comment. You know, say that somebody says something that they didn't intend for it to be hurtful, but it just kind of hit you wrong. That's a time where, yeah, you may not even need to bring that up, but reconciliation is still happening. It's just happening because they don't feel like they're out of step, that there's a lack of peace there in your relationship. And you then, by taking that to God and then saying, you know what, this is not a big deal.
And you're releasing it.
And you release it.
Yeah.
Now, there's a fake version of that because we feel like we don't want to talk about it, or we're scared to bring it up, or we think it's better to not, but then we hold on to it, which is what Paul's talking about, I think partly in 1 Corinthians 13, when he talks about love keeps no record of wrongs. That's not saying that we don't remember a pattern of behavior that's destructive. Like sometimes that gets weaponized towards people of like, you know, if I came in every day and just belittled you every single day in the office, and then you bring it up and be like, man, this is like every day you come in and you belittle me. And I'm like, well, love keeps no record of wrongs, Jeff. Like you shouldn't, like, that's not the way that is meant to be used. But where it is used is, I think, to say, if I say that I'm fine with something, I say something's okay, but I'm actually not, and it's just burrowing and it's festering. Then you have a situation where your brother or your sister has offended you, and they don't even know that they offended you. They don't even know what's going on. You haven't given them the opportunity either, because a lot of times we don't like to admit what bothers us, and then we don't know how to bring it up when it does.
And some people aren't safe. You know what I mean? So to bring it up is to bring up the wrong is to bring more pain than sometimes it feels like it's worth it.
For sure.
You know what I mean?
Then what do you do in that situation? Because you can't, yeah, so everybody's had that situation where you feel like, yeah, if I brought it up, I know exactly how they would respond to this, and it's not going to be positive. So it's not worth it. How do you pursue reconciliation? And I do think it'd be good. I guess there was another part that I cut out, was really kind of hammering the difference between forgiveness and reconciliation. Again, I alluded to it, that forgiveness can be one-sided, basically, that people don't need to ask for your forgiveness to be able to forgive them. You can forgive people that don't ask for it, because what you're doing is releasing them to God's judgment, and you're just saying, okay, I've mourned this, I've grieved this hurt, and I'm letting go my claim to making it right and trusting that God will make it right. And so you no longer want vengeance for it. Like, you no longer want to inflict that and feel that it's that you need to do that. And in fact, I would say in order to reconcile, you should have already forgiven somebody, right? So sometimes you need to talk so that you can work towards forgiveness, but understanding that reconciliation happens after that, because it's only, you know, if you've ever had a situation where you're in a friend offended you or hurt you, and you decide, you know what, I need to bring this up because this has been a pattern, or I don't think they know what they said, but they continue to joke about this and it actually, you know, is really hurtful. And so, but if you've already forgiven them and you go to them now and sharing, now you're looking for reconciliation. The fact that you've forgiven them means you're not looking for them to pay for what they've done or to try to make right what they've done. When you go into a conversation like that, that's when you end up in a situation of like, well, they apologize, but did they apologize enough? And I don't know if they were really sorry. And I don't know if they really meant it. And you get into that trap and the enemy's just sitting there going like, well, that wasn't a real apology. Because what's happening there is you don't feel satisfied. You were hurt. They said they were sorry, but you don't feel satisfied. So you assume that the reason you don't feel satisfied is because they didn't do enough to make it right. But that's judgment. That's like, and so that's why, you know, Paul says when he quotes God saying, vengeance is mine, like give that to God. God will make that right. When you go to somebody, you're not looking for them really to make it right. That's something we all hope for and want. But if you go into it already with a posture of, I've already forgiven them this wrong against me, but what I want to do is reconcile, that's a different conversation rather than trying to just make somebody feel sufficiently bad for what they did.
Yeah. I mean, and we struggle with it. I mean, there's so many reasons that we struggle with that dynamic. Sometimes it's because the person that is asking for forgiveness has done the thing they're asking for it for like countless times.
Yes.
And we feel like almost like it puts us in a vulnerable place to let them off the hook. I think people feel that way. Like if I say, okay, yes, I forgive you for that wrong again. Even though I think we know in our heart, and we've read in the scriptures how many times we are supposed to forgive, right? It's there's not a limit to the forgiveness, because there's not a limit to God's forgiveness for us either. But I do think that's one of the reasons that people can struggle with it. It does come down to a heart posture, doesn't it? Like what you're describing there, like the heart posture towards the other person. I think it's also hard because it's painful. I mean, I think it's one of the things that in the cross is put on like display physically, like with Jesus, what it took for Jesus to bring us the forgiveness that we have in Christ was involved a lot of pain actually. And I don't think that's just metaphorical. I think it's really what happens even when we forgive now. We're taking pain upon ourselves and we're saying, I'm not going to inflict this on you. And when we do that, we are imitating him in a really powerful way. And that's only that kind of imitation is only possible because of his forgiveness of us and his work in us. But I do think that's why it can be so difficult to do it.
But I think, yeah, in an upside down kind of way, that taking that pain on actually frees you from future pain in it. Because when you hold something, we all know, I mean, people have said a million times over that when you forgive, the person that really benefits is you. And that's because you're letting go of that place of judge. You're letting go of that responsibility. You're letting go of needing that and of that dominating your life. Then you are definitely releasing, like not giving them power. Holding a grudge is definitely giving power to somebody who's hurt you, because it's now, it affects your life. It's changing your other relationships. It's negatively impacting you in a lot of ways. And so there's so many reasons. I think it's interesting that forgiveness is this idea that, you know, we get this from God, and it is this obviously very Christian idea. I mean, other religions have forgiveness too, but it's because it's so self-evident in the world. Secular psychologists who are atheists will say forgiveness is really important because you see the effects of not forgiving, of holding a grudge. And it's because you're holding on to something that's not yours to hold on to. You can't bear that weight. But you mentioned it's hard when somebody has done the same thing over and over again. And I do think that's where it's helpful to to point out the difference between forgiveness and reconciliation. Like there is a point, and it's so interesting. Jesus doesn't differentiate. So we have to be careful when he doesn't, like, because when they ask Jesus, how many times should we forgive? You know, as many as seven times. And he says 70 times seven. So obviously he's not saying 490 times. He's saying just there's no end to your forgiveness for someone. Well, why is that the case? Because there's no end to God's forgiveness to those who repent. And so I think, like, it would have been great if Jesus would have said that, they would have said, so do we just keep, you know, there's an element of like, do I just keep getting hurt by them? This is what's hard, and this is why it always takes discernment, and why you can't just put it down to some pithy little statement that then we use, because anytime we get something like that, we're going to twist it. Mm-hmm. And we're going to use it to justify something. So if we say, well, forgiveness is saying I release this, but it's not saying I have to let you hurt me again. There is a circumstance and a situation where that is true. There's also circumstances where that is not true. Jesus, you know, explicitly says, like, to turn the other cheek, like, to present that side also. If someone strikes you, present the other side. That there is, both are true, and it takes discernment in that. And I've just found that there are people who are more wired to write people off and say, well, yeah, I forgive them, but I don't want to have anything to do with them. So I'm never going to talk to them again, because I'm not going to just let myself get hurt like that. Well, that's not good fruit. I guess I would say that. And then there are other people who constantly, like, feel like, well, to forgive someone means that I have to, like, continue to trust them. So say somebody, like, violates your trust, you share something with them, and then they go and tell everybody, and you forgive them, and then you try again, and then they go and tell everybody again, and, you know, and they use it to wound you and to hurt you. At that point, like, we would probably say, hey, you can forgive them and be kind to them and love them, but part of loving them is probably going to be not entrusting them with things that they clearly can't handle.
Yeah, some healthy boundaries are important.
Yeah, because healthy boundaries in those senses are, so I think even saying that is saying the difference between those two scenarios of the person who says, well, I forgive them, but I'm not going to let them hurt me again. That's more of a self-serving thing, where the other of saying, you know what, I'm not going to set them up for failure like that. I've learned that they can't handle me trusting them with things, so I'm just not going to put them in that position. You wouldn't ask a friend, if a friend keeps if you ask me to watch your dogs, and every time you do that, they almost starve to death because I forget about it. At some point, you're just not going to do it. Now, you cannot do it as a way of vengeance of, like, you know, I'm not going to let you do that. Or you could do it as a way of going, okay, obviously you're not able to handle this, and so I'm not going to continue to put you in this position to, you know, to create this pain. And that's this is why we always talk about community. I don't know how you deal with that outside of processing that with people who love Jesus and are following him and are actually open to where the temptation to sin might lie.
Yeah, because I think some of us are going to be very, like, we're going to err on the side of self-protection in those situations. I think it could be pretty easy to, in a self-protective stance, I'm not saying that that's always bad. We need to be aware, and healthy boundaries are important. But basically where we say, I'm not going to put myself in a situation to be disappointed again. And that's more about me than it is about the other person.
Right.
And there's ways that our hearts can take this. It, you know, Jay, I think, kind of shifting gears a little bit, the timing of this sermon with the family gatherings that are about to happen.
Yeah.
Right. I think it'd be helpful to just for a couple minutes talk about that reality. I mean, so some people are going to have gatherings where this isn't a thing, but most people will have some gathering in the next couple of weeks where they will be with people where forgiveness is a thing, right? It has been in the past, it will continue to be, and maybe there's even some unreconciled relationships. And it might not even be to that level. It might just be, you know what, when we're all at the table together, it gets a little whatever, fill in the blank. I guess, how would you recommend, like, taking some of these ideas, these big ideas from this series about who God is and who we are, but even thinking the last couple of weeks, but intimacy with God and then intimacy with people that we were made for, how do we live this out in a way that really does honor Jesus, that's faithful to him, and is how he designed us to be his image bearers, in context that this time of year can be kind of challenging? They're both delightful and challenging, right, at the same time. How would we begin to think practically about walking into situations that we anticipate much of this sermon to be applicable to?
Well, I think the first thing is just always stuff your face with food, and you don't have to respond to anybody.
Just a lot of nodding.
Just a lot of nodding, like, and then go and take a nap, yeah. Fall asleep on the couch. It's probably your safest bet in those situations.
Football games.
Yeah, football. Yeah, just whatever you can find. Avoidance. That's the theme. I mean, it's a good question. I think one thing that I find helpful, especially in those relationships that are in your life, either, I don't want to say not by choice, but I want to say they're often people that you don't interact with on a daily basis. And I think kind of understanding spheres of influence and spheres of impact on your life. You know, think about someone that's way on the fringes of your life, like the person that cuts your hair, or the person that, you know, that you might see at the grocery store, the cashier or whatever. Their life and their situation has very, very little, very minimal impact on you. If the cashier is rude to you at the grocery store, like, you're probably going to, that should not affect, if that affects you all day, then that's an unhealthy response to somebody that you're not in constant interaction, versus like your spouse or your best friend or someone you work with really closely every day at work, and you have to have this relationship. So I think some of it is just knowing what kind of categories to put people into, to say, like, all right, if this is my Uncle Fred, who just says some crazy stuff at Christmas dinner, I'm just going to figure out how to steer the conversation to something else. Like, we all have the relatives that just want to bring up things that are going to create problems, and find something else that they like to talk about. You know, maybe it's fishing, maybe it's whatever. Just, you know, you can kind of be an agent of peace in those gatherings.
Yeah. Here's a really simple principle. The person who's asking the questions is controlling the conversation. And that is true for most conversations, but especially like dinner table with a bunch of people. The person who's being really curious ends up kind of setting the agenda for what we're going to talk about next.
Yeah.
So that's one way, like, to basically be loving too, like, to be interested in people, but also to be proactive with that. If you're asking questions about life or about things that are not controversial, often that can help steer a person who can't help themselves or seemingly cannot help themselves, right?
Right.
From going there.
Yeah, I love that. That's such a great, that's gold. That's a little nugget right there. To ask questions, be curious. I think the other thing that comes up during this time, though, is long held hurts. So, you know, childhoods that were painful, things that were never faced, things that were never talked about. I see that a lot up here, and I see that a lot everywhere, that there's just like, it's the skeletons in the closet kind of a thing. And so some people really struggle to be around family because they struggle to basically to make small talk when there are these deeper wounds and these deeper hurts. And, you know, one way of dealing with it, it's a little late now on December 23rd, but maybe a January 1st gathering, I don't know. But one way is to preemptively, you know, reach out and to try to have a conversation before that. The other thing to do, though, is, you know, for me, my personality, I struggle I struggle when I know there's something deeper going on. I struggle to do small talk. And I've always thought that that's because I like to be transparent and that I can't fake it. So, and I hear a lot of people use that language of like, well, I'm not good at faking, you know, and there is an element of truth in that. You can absolutely fake kindness. You know, it's the kind of, if you don't have something nice to say, don't say anything at all. So I definitely want to, I think there is partial truth in that, but there is another option. You don't have to, if there's like these deep seated woundings, maybe you've tried to bring it up and they don't want to talk about it or they don't see it the same way you do. And so you realize, man, this, I don't know that this hurt is going to be fully healed this side of eternity because they're not, you know, they're never going to want to talk about it. What you can do is like what we talked about a few weeks ago, about looking at them as God's image, that they are the Imago Dei, that they have their own baggage, their own hurt, their own, they are just another broken human being trying to make it through this life. And that can bring about some compassion and also some desire for them to know who they are in Christ. And so now being kind to them, being, you know, being curious about their life, praying for them, any of those things, it's not fake. It's genuine, but it's also not dismissing the hurt. Does that make sense? Like, I feel like the fakeness is when you just say like, well, I'm just not going to think about the fact that this person really upsets me and I'm just going to pretend that everything's okay. That's fake. And I don't think that's honoring to Christ. But the only response to being fake is not being blunt and feeling like, well, we have to deal with this right now. And if you don't want to deal with it, too bad. Like I get to set the tone. It took me a while to realize how selfish that was to be like, well, no, I can't handle this. So we have to talk about it right now. Well, it's kind of immature. And so then once I realized that, I was like, okay, there's got to be another option because I can't have the only options be to need instant gratification to deal with this because I can't handle it or to be fake. You know, and this is part of when scripture talks about that there's always a way of escape in every temptation. You know, when you talk like that, that gets misquoted a lot of that God won't give you anything more than you can handle. But the idea is that there's not going to be any sin. There's not going to be any temptation to sin, which in that case, it would be to force your agenda and make it about you, that you need to talk about this right now, whether grandma wants to talk about it or not, or whether mom wants to talk about it or not, or to be fake. And we often get caught in these false dichotomies, but that's part of what that passage is saying, is that the Spirit will give you a way out. And in that situation, the way out would be, oh, this is an image bearer who is also broken and dealing with their own stuff. And I want to respond to them the way God responded to me in my brokenness when I wasn't ready to deal with some of the sin that was in my life. God still loved me, that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. He showed me mercy before I said that I needed mercy, right? Like, so I want to show mercy to people before they even recognize or are ready to acknowledge their need for mercy.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I think that just being able to recognize that we don't have to have the thing we want with that person right in that moment. And I think we all know this, but like just saying the obvious, like that doesn't need to happen at the dinner table at Christmas. That's almost never going to be the place where that's going to be the most fruitful.
Makes for good movies.
It does, actually, a lot of movies. I just kept thinking too of one of the fruit of the Spirit, right, is self-control. And how often in those situations, that's part of what he's doing in us is working into our own hearts. Like, I can wait on you. I can wait for your timing with this. It made me think too, you know, when someone that we're with is becoming agitated in some way, whatever, the conversation goes political or whatever happens, I think to live in reality as much as possible in that moment with yourself. So try to pay attention to what you are feeling. Because like just because someone else is agitated or reacting or reactive doesn't mean that we have to, but most of us are going to feel something. And I think that's where our prayer life can really be deepened, and we can go to more intimacy with Jesus than we maybe have had before in those moments, where we actually tell him in our own heart in that moment, like, I feel my heart starting to stir. You might even feel the physical result of being embodied soul in the fact that, like, you're getting some sort of energy, you know, your heart's beating a little faster. You're getting a fight or flight response because you feel the tension at the table or whatever in that conversation. And just telling Jesus that in that moment and asking for his mercy and taking a deep breath can be so helpful, because you're not pretending. You're like, again, you're not pretending like you don't feel something. Like, it just doesn't matter what people say. I'm immune. It matters, right? But doing something fruitful with that in that moment is so important. You got to do something with it. You're primed to act. That's why you feel that way. It's like priming you to do something. And I guess what I want to suggest is that those are moments for us, especially around the holidays, when for many people, I'm just thinking about conversations I've had the last couple of weeks with people here. For many people, it is such a hard time because of that. Reactive people and agitated people. And I think going deeper in the way we communicate with Jesus in those moments is so important. And deciding ahead of time that that's how you're going to respond is so important too, rather than, you know what I mean, stomping away, like all the ways that we can respond that really aren't helpful. And actually they don't help us either, but they feel good in the moment. We feel like we're kind of getting our pound of flesh, maybe a little bit, giving a person what they deserve. Those are things that happen in our heart. But just saying, Jesus, I'm annoyed at what that person is doing right now. And I need your help. I want to respond in a way. And I want the wake of my life in this moment to reflect you. And that's not easy for us. And he knows that. And he is so, we know that he longs to help us in those moments with his spirit in us and to bring encouragement. And the other thing I would just suggest too is looking for the ways that God is bringing comfort and encouragement into your life that day. You know, ways that maybe are less obvious, you know, and seeking to be able to reflect on that, even in those moments. Like, yeah, this is a hard conversation or a hard dinner or whatever. And I got this. He brought this into my life today as well. And whatever those things are. I mean, all of our situations are so different. So I'm kind of intentionally not giving a lot of concrete with that one. But basically looking for and anticipating that he will be present and he will be bringing things into your life that are really gifts of his grace right when you need it.
Yeah, it's gifts that remind you of his presence. Yeah. Right? So, because the reality is that I don't care how painful, whatever situation that you could possibly be walking into during this season, if Jesus was actually in the flesh and was going to go with you to that family dinner and, you know, sit next to you, like, what couldn't you handle? Mm-hmm. Like, what would be too great?
What would happen? I mean, think about that. Yeah. Like, play that out.
Yeah.
If what would actually happen? And I'm confident for every one of us, including our most difficult relatives, would be transfixed and want to interact with him. He would become the focus of everything happening. And I think that is actually a way that for us to do that thought experiment a little bit can be a way of receiving his comfort in that moment. Because he would have things to say and he would bring life. And I do believe he would just be the focus of everything. You just don't go on with like, okay, I have more stuffing.
Right. Well, okay. So think about that. So man, I feel like we stumbled into something that could be really helpful. So this is half baked in my brain, but imagine a family dinner where, you know, politics is a volatile subject and it's going to come up. Who would you rather have with you? Would you rather have, you know, the political pundit of your choice who has like the YouTube, what, you know, like what if you were able to take them with you, to dinner?
All the answers, right?
they would be able to just refute everything and like say all the perfect things to put Uncle Fred in his place. Would you rather have that, or would you rather have Jesus, who was, like, how would Jesus impact that? What would that look like?
And what's front of mind for him?
And right. And, but then realize you actually get to choose who you're bringing.
Yeah.
So when you get in that conversation, you can bring internally your internal political pundit and try to basically bring that version of, you know, whoever. I could name different ones, but whatever. You can think of whoever you want to think of. That I'm going to bring that person with me. So I'm going to say the thing that I heard them say to a person that said, you know, had that argument or whatever. Well, that's what's the fruit of that compared to if you bring Jesus with you, and that you now in the spirit of Christ respond in the way that Jesus would. You get to respond as a political pundit, or you can respond as Jesus, but you can't respond as both. And it's a question of who are you bringing into that environment? And as a Christ follower, you are bringing the Spirit of God with you into every environment. And the Spirit of God is going to have an impact on that gathering. And it's not going to be, you know, some people would say, right, you know, that's, you know, the whole speaking truth thing. And so you would, you know, have the answers for all that. That is not likely. The only way that I think that would happen is if you get into that family dinner and there are people who are using religion to shame people. Well, then I could see Jesus having a confrontation at Christmas dinner. But that would be the only scenario I could imagine him having that kind of interaction. So just be mindful. Like, I get to bring God's presence into this room and into this dinner, and it can have the impact that God's Spirit has. And then looking, like you said, looking for ways that God is present. Before we wrap up, I did want to point out something. I wanted to ask you about this, that during this message, I had a moment where I felt like, oh, that felt the most pointed that I feel. You know, people talk about how I, you know, sometimes will say hard things or provocative things or whatever, but it's never meant to do anything but to get us, stir us to think. But on Sunday, I felt like I said something. I was like, oh, that felt really pointed. And it's when I was talking about jealousy and talking specifically about cliques and how that Cain's problem wasn't Abel, it was Cain. And I said, so, you know, most of the time, like, your problem isn't that other people are doing all of these different things or excluding you or whatever. The problem is you. And I wanted to make sure, I was curious, like, what, I was curious, one, did you feel like that was, did that make you cringe or like go, oh boy, that feels pointed? Or did it come across like the understanding, you know, I'm hopeful that as I talked about it, that would have been understood, that I'm not blaming you, saying like, well, you're the reason why that person has sin. That's not the point. Like, there are people who are judgmental. There are people who exclude others. There are people who might look down on you or look down on me and say like, you're not worth my time. And that's not your fault. But the feeling of being lonely, most of the time when I deal with somebody who feels lonely, I'm like, you're actually the biggest obstacle to real relationship. And sometimes it's because you're fixated on a specific person or specific people that you want to, like, you're very specific about who you want to be friends with and how those friendships should go. And it's a very self-serving and self-centered desire for that connection. And so that's a problem. Or it's that you just automatically assume that, that everybody else has these connections. And so I'm just curious, that whole idea of cliques, and it being a you problem. What were your thoughts when,
I mean, it's like both things, right? I think it's hard because there's none, every one of us, I don't think that's overstated. I think every one of us has experienced a moment of being or feeling left out, whether or not it was an intentional, I'm leaving you out. Right. And I guess when I hear what you say differently too, Jay. So I think asking how I react, just cause I know you in a way that, and I see you almost every day. So what I hear you saying is you're not dismissing the pain that's involved in that at all. And in fact, I know part of your story, you know, that's an important part of it. You don't want people to be overlooked and missed. I do think often what we, I mean, it's an example to me of blaming, you know, where we can be, I want relationships to look like this and they don't look like that. And for me to be okay, basically what we're telling ourselves, for me to be okay, I need them to be that way. And unfortunately, for some people, this isn't for everybody, but for some people, what they really want is more than any human being can actually give them, you know? And I think that's what I was hearing in that moment. I didn't hear you dismissing that feeling, but if anyone heard that, I think it's a good chance for us to say that wasn't the goal of that. It's, we need to be examining our own hearts and our reaction to feeling like I'm missing out on connection in some way. And I think it's a good call for us all to have our eyes open. Like who around me needs an invitation to something, you know what I mean? Who around in my life, can I invite into the next thing? And, you know, I think it's very normal for us to have a group of people that we typically do that with and not think about expanding it. But there's something really powerful about being brothers and sisters in Christ where that community does expand, right? It's growing, and there because of two reasons. One, there's new people coming in as Jesus works in new hearts and they become followers of his. So that's part of being part of the family of God, right? Is that we are always wanting and praying for more and new people. But also just because we take on the heart of Jesus that is really looking for who needs blessing, who needs comfort. And so I think it's interesting. It's both a call to guard against an oversensitivity or maybe an overreacting in some moments, but also a call to all of us to be aware of like who is in our life that could use that, could use our friendship.
Yeah, and when you come from a place of security that comes from being known by Christ, that's what I was trying to really drive at, is that you don't, then you're not looking to other people to give you what only Jesus can give you, right? So and it shows up in so many ways. Like we get ideal, if you're the type of person who often gets really excited about a new friendship but then only to be let down, then that's probably an indicator of something like this, that you're looking for them to fulfill something that only Christ can. You know, you see that a lot with people who get jobs. Like every job that they get is like, oh, this is great. And then within a few months, it's the worst thing ever. And that's typically a sign that you're putting a weight on that thing to fulfill you in a way that it can't. Because your enthusiasm at the outset is like your hopes are like you kind of have rose colored glasses and you kind of anticipate, and then it goes away. This happens not with relationships, with jobs, with purchases, with all kinds of things. But it also shows up when we get really picky. I've just noticed that. Like, it's amazing to me. You'd think that a culture that is as lonely as we are would have a much lower bar about who we would actually, you know, hang out with. And, you know, you and I deal with this a lot, and I get it. I understand that humans are wired to, we want quick and easy. And our culture is just even more so that we want quick and easy. And we are in a world where you feel like you have infinite choices. So you can go online and you can find people who think this exact thing and enjoy this exact hobby or do whatever. And then you think, oh, that's what I want. I want friends who want to go on that kind of trip or go do that kind of thing, and who think about things in this way. And pretty soon you've got this very specific kind of idea. And so you hang out with somebody like, well, yeah, but the conversation didn't flow so easily, or their kids are a little bit younger than mine, and so that didn't quite, you know, that doesn't quite work out. And, you know, or they have kids and that's kind of annoying. And, you know, or I just want somebody that's kind of my age and my life stage. And, you know, I get all those things. It's fun to have, I love finding things I have in common with people. That's a beautiful gift. It's not wrong to like to have things in common with people, but what we're really looking for is deep connection with people, with other Christ followers. And I've said this before, but I've just learned it in years of ministry, and I'm guessing that you've experienced the same thing, that people tend to, when you meet somebody, you tend to, you're trying to find something in common, and you'll dig as deep as you have to find that thing in common. And once you've found it, you stop digging. So it's a little bit like you're trying to find a treasure, and then you stop digging, and then that's what you connect over, and that's what you always talk about. So I'll use the example of, if you find out that this person works, you know, worked at the same place you worked at, you know, then that's what you're going to talk about, and you'll talk about that every time. If you find out that they're a Packers fan or they're a Bears fan or they're whatever, then you're like, oh, we have that in common, so now we're going to talk about that every time. And it's very hard to move past the thing that you feel like you connected over. If it's people that have kids that are in a similar life stage, like, you talk about that, and that's what you always talk about. And so what actually, in this upside down kind of way, some of the richest friendships you will ever have are ones that you have literally nothing else in common with other than Jesus. Like, if you're going to go and sit with someone that's 40 years older than you and have coffee, you're probably not going to talk about what reel you saw on TikTok. You're probably not going to talk about, you know, just youth sports in depth. You're not going to talk about you might find that what you talk about is Jesus, and you talk about, you know, hard learned lessons, and you talk about real heart stuff. That's the beautiful gift. And yeah, can you have that with somebody that's your age and your life stage and cheers for the same team as you? You can, for sure. I'm just saying that for whatever reason, in the real world experience that I've had, that's less common. That the friendships that I see, and when people talk about the relationships that they have in the church, and then when I look at the relationships I have in the church, the deepest ones are typically they're with people that I don't have much else in common with, because then when we're together, the only thing we have to talk about is Jesus. I don't know, has that been your experience, or have you seen that? And I mean, you did campus ministry where everyone's basically the same age and kind of in the same life stage. And it's hard to like move past the things that you have in common. Now, when you're in a situation where everybody around you, then maybe that's, I think the filter gets narrowed. Like, if everybody's the same age, then you start going to other things that you feel like, well, I have to have that in common. Right. Like, you know, you move to a small town. If you meet somebody that's within 10 years of you, you're like, oh, you're basically my age. Yeah. But in college, you're like, oh, you're first year and I'm like a third year. Like, what do I have in common with you?
Well, I think you're describing the dynamic, and it, you know, it's a function of the level of intimacy that relationship has. Right. I mean, so a relationship that's primarily about, some affinity, you know, interest or a team or whatever, that hasn't gone to the level of intimacy that we were designed to go to with other people. But a relationship that is not primarily about, you know, the temporary affinities that we have in our lives, but about timeless things and meaningful things, will, for us, followers of Jesus, will always be going to him in his kingdom in some way. And that is a function, then, I think, of a growing intimacy and relationship with each other. Because to have a meaningful conversation about him isn't just us talking about facts we know about him. It's actually us talking about our experience of him and his experience in our life, and praying for each other and concerns, and all that goes with that. Is that's a much more intimate relationship where you are knowing the other person and they are knowing you in a way that's way beyond the externals or the way we appear to be, I guess. So to me, it's also something I think we just need to be aware is possible by his Spirit, to go to a much more meaningful, rich place with people. It doesn't mean we can't have fun with like a Packer Bear game. That's great. I got all kinds of texts on Sunday about that from Bear fans. That was fun. But if that's the only place I go with them, I'm missing out on knowing them the way that God designed me to.
Yeah. And people should know that this is, I can't speak for you, Jeff, but this is hard for me. I mean, I love connecting with people about whatever. And then, but I, as much of an extrovert as I am, I get awkward with shifting gears Like everyone feels the weight of talking about something that you've never talked about before. And the more, like, just imagine that you meet somebody at church even, and you talk about the Packers. And then if every week you talked about the Packers for like the whole football season, and then, you know, February, the second weekend of February rolls around and you see that person, it is terrifying for anyone to be like, you know what, I'm going to ask, hey, what'd you think of the sermon? Or I'm going to ask, hey, would you like, how could I pray for you this week? And it's going to feel awkward at first. And that's part of what I wanted to get at with the whole community thing. That's not easy. It's simple, but it's not easy. Mm-hmm. And it's messy and it's awkward, but it's worth it. Right? Like, and we all know that. We all know that no, every friendship, you know, I've pointed this out before, every friendship starts with an awkward conversation. There's a moment where you like say something to somebody you don't know, even if it was, you know, in kindergarten. So, and then not getting fixated. What I just keep picturing, what would it look like on a Sunday morning if everyone came into the worship service thinking, I'm already fulfilled in Christ. Now, who can I bless with the intimacy that I've been given? And just trust God, like telling God, okay, God, I know there's going to be people that you want me to care for. I know there's people that you want me to connect with. And those people might be people that you have a lot in common with, or they might not. And they might be, and just because you connect with them, by the way, doesn't mean that you're also then committing to hanging out every day for the rest of your life. You can let those things develop. But I think that the overwhelming point that I really wanted to make is it's already there. You already have it. You already have all of the intimacy that you could ever need or want in Christ. And then you have the grace upon grace of having a church family, most of whom would love to connect. And almost all of whom, if they were answering a survey, would say, I don't feel like I have enough community or enough deep relationships. I don't think people really understand that. I would say that if you did a survey, over 90% would say, I don't feel like I have enough community and deep relationships. And I think people just would be stunned by that because they think that they're one of the 10% that don't have it. And if you can flip that script and realize, no, the last thing I'd say is that it reminds me, it's a little bit like the freshman dorm. You know, you always would say that in the freshman dorm, anybody, if you went to like a traditional 4-year college and they had freshman dorms, everybody in that dorm is in the same boat. Lots of people make friends because there's the assumption that like, well, nobody has friends yet. But those are very rare circumstances where you feel that way. Most of the time you feel like you're walking into a situation where everybody already has their friends. Everybody always is set with everything. And then you just kind of buy into that and then live out of that narrative rather than the narrative that you're fulfilled in Christ. And there are people here who God has placed in your life to be able to love and care for.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good point. I think if we go to other people to be filled in a way that we can only be filled by Christ, we're gonna end up being like putting a burden on them that they can never actually bear. Like they can't meet that need that we have. It's only gonna be met with our Creator and really knowing Him and being known by Him. That's one of the beautiful things about Christmas is that He enters into our mess. Like He entered into the world He made intentionally, knowing all of it. He decided to do that. But then from that place of being filled in Him and being secure in Him, we can take those steps, right, to build friendship. And I often think like one of the best things we can do is be open about ourselves in a healthy way, you know? And it might be... way. Yeah, I mean, there's ways that you can overwhelm people, right? And they're like, oh, yes. Gosh, that was too much. I don't know if I have what that person needs, right? But to say, hey, I have this going on this week. Could you pray for me? Like, that's a really easy thing on a Sunday morning that would not make people feel weird at all. Mm. And it's a really easy way to then invite, like, by doing that, by asking a person, like, revealing something about your life and asking them to pray for you this week, they may reciprocate it by doing the same for you. Yeah. And I think we just need to start doing the thing that we would love for other people to do with us from a place of security in Christ.
Yeah. So just a really practical thing with that is if you go up to somebody, combining it with what you said earlier about asking questions, if you go up to somebody and you ask them how their week has been and what are they looking forward to this next week, or, you know, if there's anything that's causing them stress, you know, this upcoming week, people can answer that however they want to. They don't have to, you're not prodding or it's not like you're going to follow up and be like, no, come on, tell me. Like, I wouldn't do that. Just let people do that. What's going to happen if you do that? They're likely going to reciprocate. They're likely going to say, well, how was your week? And that gives you the opportunity to share, like what you're saying, in an appropriate way there, to say, you know, this week I'm actually kind of stressed because I've got this test, this medical, like I've got this appointment, you know, or whatever. If you think about it, if you prayed for, you know, I would love it. I would appreciate any prayers, you know, not putting them on the spot of saying like, hey, will you commit to praying for me for the next 5 days? And I'm going to ask you each, like not doing that, but just saying, opening that door, because what you're doing in that moment is you're setting a culture. Every conversation you have with anybody is setting the culture of your relationship. And when you set the culture early on that you both offer prayer and ask for prayer, that you share, that you're transparent, that it's not, you can set the culture that, oh, we're the friends that talk about the Packers. You can set the culture of, oh, you're the person that I ask, how are you doing? And you say fine. And I say fine. Or can't complain, and now that's our norm. Those cultures get set. But when you early on can set the culture of transparency and offering prayer, then that's what that friendship then grows into, and will continue to grow in that and deepen. So I love that. I think that's helpful to end on a really practical way of something that you can do at Christmas Eve or next Sunday. You can start that out and practice it. And then whatever their response, even if they don't reciprocate, and even if they don't, whatever, it doesn't matter, because in Christ you're already fulfilled and you can then go and try to encourage someone else. I promise you that if you do that on a Sunday morning, it's not going to take you very long to find somebody who is really hungry for that kind of connection. And if you need help figuring that out, like, talk to us. We can also help point you in the right direction. Every week, I mean, I'd love it if somebody came up to me and said, is there somebody you'd like me to go connect with? I never have any shortage of people that I'm trying to get around to. I could probably like point you in a direction. But you can also, as you're kind of walking through this, you reach out to us, let us help you get connected. Let us know if you have any questions about anything that we've talked about here. You can always email us at connect@faithpeshtigo.com or just talk to us after a service, before or after a service on a Sunday. We hope you have a very Merry Christmas, and we appreciate you taking the time to listen. We hope it's been helpful to you. Until next time, grace and peace.